The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome. It is Wednesday, May 15th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We are having a hell of a day here at Rolla J Studios. I'll tell you all about it in hour two, but before we get to that, we got to get to all the latest in the marijuana news. And I was awakened today to a Facebook post from someone that pointed out that the Denver Westward had picked up on the whole Dr. Christian Thurstone injectable marijuana scaremongering that I had written about a few days ago. And they even quoted me in the piece, included a very nice headshot picture of me as well. So we're going to talk about that in today's Radical Rant, the ongoing reefer madness of Denver's Dr. Christian Thurstone. Make sure you check that out. Also, we're going to talk with Dr. Mitch Earlywine today in a replay segment from last March on the subject of THC and impairment. We're on a replay schedule with Dr. Mitch today because he is celebrating a Shavuos with the family. So we will invite him back for next week's show. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines because there's a study coming out of Denver that's warning that they may not make as much tax revenue from legalized marijuana as previously predicted. And in doing so, they estimate what the annual consumption of a Colorado pot smoker is. I have some questions about some of these numbers, so we're going to check that out in behind the headlines. Also on today's show, it's Irie Wednesday, so we get our daily toker tunes from Brian the Red, who's sitting right alongside me. What's our tune for today, Brian?
Today we got an old track that we featured on the show last week. It was an old 45 called Stand Up by Soul Majestic and Anthony B.
All right, looking forward
to
that.
Track. And tonight for Red Eyes Reggae Flashback at 8 p.m. Pacific, we've got a whole new lineup of 45s. 7 inches for your listening pleasure.
All right, check that out. We got that coming up 8 o'clock Pacific time tonight. Also, if you're an iTunes subscriber, you want to subscribe through iTunes, we've got our new iTunes feeds up for Russ Belville Show, Toker Talk Radio, 420 Radio News, A Different View, and the Libra Lounge. So you can check those out on iTunes or go to 420radio.org. I'll be posting the links there for you. Before we get to all that, we got our 420 Radio News. We'll be taking a look at the headlines coming out of the Huffington Post that have to do with blood sugar and cannabis use, decrim in Michigan, medical marijuana in Illinois, another UFC fighter busted for pot, and a terrible wreck involving a BMW and marijuana. All that coming up on the Russ Belville Show, so stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAgenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, May 15th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Regular marijuana users may be skinnier, have better blood sugar control, according to a new study reported in HuffingtonPost.com. People who regularly smoke marijuana may have better control of their blood sugar and may be skinnier than non-marijuana users, according to a new study. The research published in the American Journal of Medicine shows that people who reported regularly using marijuana had a lower risk of insulin resistance and had lower fasting insulin levels compared with people who had never used marijuana. Researchers also found an association between using marijuana and having a smaller waist circumference and higher levels of good HDL cholesterol compared with non-users. The research was conducted by scientists from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, the University of Nebraska, and the Harvard School of Public Health. Researchers found that the associations between marijuana use and insulin cholesterol levels were especially pronounced among the current users. They had 16% lower fasting insulin levels compared with never users, but not as pronounced among those who had used marijuana before but weren't current users. And even though researchers acknowledge that people who use marijuana consume more calories than non-users, they still found links between smaller waist circumference and marijuana use. However, they said they were not sure why this association exists. Marijuana decriminalization in Michigan, Democratic House leader just says no, from MLive.com. Michigan House Democratic leader Tim Grimmel does not support marijuana decriminalization bill that was introduced last month by a member of his own caucus, another indication that the legislation is likely to face an uphill battle in the legislature. Grimmel, emphasizing that he was speaking only for himself and not all House Democrats, said Tuesday that he has, quote, serious concerns about any proposal to legitimize, decriminalize, or legalize marijuana. I think it's important to try to discourage use of illegal drugs, he told MLive. I would acknowledge that we've had limited success in doing that, but I am concerned that if currently illegal drugs were made legal, there would be some uptick or upsurge in the usage of those drugs, and that carries with it adverse health risks, end quote. Democratic State Representative Jeff Irwin's bill would not legalize the drug in Michigan, but it would change the penalty for small-time possession from a possible jail time to a fine of $25 for first offense, $50 for second offense, and $75 for a third offense. Illinois medical marijuana bill endorsed by Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon awaits Senate vote, from HuffingtonPost.com. With legislation that would bring legal medical marijuana to Illinois pending in the State House, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon on Sunday announced the bill has her support. She said, quote, it does both a good job of getting medical marijuana to people who need it and keeping it away from those who don't, end quote. The bill would establish a four-year pilot program during which individuals with serious diseases, including cancer, HIV, or multiple sclerosis, would be able to get a special ID card allowing them to buy limited amounts, up to 2.5 ounces of medical marijuana from one of 60 state-licensed dispensaries. The program is tightly restrictive, not accepting chronic pain as a qualifying condition for use, and not recognizing qualifying patients who live in other states, unlike other states who have approved medical marijuana bills. The bill also requires that patients have an established doctor-patient relationship before a doctor can okay marijuana use. After failed marijuana test, UFC's Pat Healy loses at least $130,000 in bonuses, from MMAJunkie.com. An evening with old friends will ultimately cost UFC lightweight Pat Healy $130,000 in lost bonuses. As reported Tuesday, he failed a post-fight drug test following his recent UFC 159 win over fellow lightweight Jim Miller. His third-round submission victory has been overturned to a no contest, and he's been suspended for 90 days. He must surrender his $65,000 fight of the night bonus and $65,000 submission of the night bonus. The bout would have been Healy's seventh consecutive win. Marijuana-filled BMW crashes after 100-mile-per-hour police chase, from Jalopnik.com. A driver was killed after he crashed his BMW following a police chase on a California highway, injuring two road crew workers and strewing buckets and jars full of marijuana across the road in the process. According to TV station KCRA, California Highway Patrol officers chased the man for about 20 minutes on Interstate 80 on Monday afternoon with speeds hitting up to 100 miles per hour. The 40-year-old driver of the E30 then lost control of the car, sending it airborne and into two members of a California Conservation Corps work crew. The driver was killed and the two road crew members were hospitalized, one of whom had head injuries. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, May 15th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at estimates of Colorado's cannabis consumption on an annual basis and the numbers behind that. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. .org is listener-supported cannabis community radio, and while we value every $4.20 donation that comes in monthly from our members, we take this moment to offer an extra special thanks to our most generous donors, who have provided over $1,000 worth of support to 420radio.org. For their privacy's sake, we'll identify these knights and dames of the smoky table as Sir Randy of the Lakes, Dame Kathleen the Beneficent, Dame Kaylee the Wise, Sir Travis of Stumptown, Sir Rolajay of Cush, and others who wish to remain anonymous. Thank you, lords and ladies. Message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines, and I was piqued by this article that was in the Coloradoan.com. Its headline says, "How much marijuana do Colorado residents smoke?" My first thought is, on average, or the people that I know? That's a big gap there. But they have this study that came out because they're trying to figure out what is going to be the tax revenue from the legalization of marijuana there in Colorado. And so they had to do a study and figure out, well, how much marijuana are people going to smoke? Or is people going to smoke? I'm not sure on the grammar on that last sentence. But anyway, what the study found is that Coloradoans will consume 2.2 million ounces of marijuana per year. And of course, you do the math on that, that works out to about 142,000 pounds of marijuana. And what they're basing this off is a median of 3.5 ounces. And according to the article, it says that's what experts say a marijuana user would consume in 1 year. So they went and put a video together that showed what 3.5 ounces of marijuana looks like. You know, a lot of people haven't seen that much. Interestingly enough, 3.5 ounces is about what is decriminalized in the state of Ohio. It's about 100 grams is about 3.5 ounces. So they're saying a person would use 100 grams in a year. Okay, so apparently they don't know the people that we know. Let me get into some of the math on this. Another thing that they say in this article is that most people buy their pots. Okay, that's the quote here. Most people buy their pot in 1/8 ounce increments. Most people go out and buy eighths, right? Unless you're us and we buy ounces, but you know, whatever. So they say an eighth, this is what I wanted to focus on. An eighth is the marijuana equivalent of a 6-pack of beer. And how long it takes to consume either depends almost entirely upon the user. You know, a 6-pack might last one person a month, like me. I'd probably never even drink a 6-pack in a month. But for some people, that's a day, right? So a lot of variation here. The study also concluded that the taxes on newly legal marijuana will bring in about $130 million annually. However, a lot of that's going to have to go toward the expense of regulating the industry. So there's some debate as to how much windfall there will actually be from legalized marijuana. Another part of the study that I found interesting, they say the price will drop to about $185 an ounce or nearly $3,000 a pound. Not bad as far as some prices. It could be lower. But this is where the comparison gets interesting. They're saying that the average or what the estimate amount here is for the person that would use marijuana is 3.5 ounces a year. And they conclude with this paragraph. This being Fort Collins, we also figured we should give you a comparison that involves beer. So here it is. Coloradoans consume 33 gallons of beer per capita each year. The Beer Institute, which calculated Colorado's beer consumption, says other states are much higher. Topping the list is Nevada at 44 gallons per person. And Colorado's consumption is way behind that. And it's also lower than North Dakota, New Hampshire, and Montana. Well, once again, I did the math on this stuff, and I figured out what is 33 gallons of beer in 6-packs. And then once you convert 6-packs, and they say an eighth is like a 6-pack, therefore a 6-pack is like an eighth, right? You do the conversion into eighths, 33 gallons of beer would be equivalent to 7 1/3 ounces a year, more than twice the 3.5 ounce estimate that the study is supposedly putting forth here. So, if we're going to compare average beer drinker to average pot smoker, they should be using an estimate that's twice as great as what they're making. And if the estimate would be twice as great, instead of bringing in $130 million, wouldn't they be bringing in $260 million? We'll have yet to see whether people use marijuana at the same rates or whether an eighth is more accurately compared to a 12-pack than a six pack for some people. And for other people, it's more like a couple of beers. We'll have to see, because there's going to be a great variation in how much people consume, from the newbies and the every now and thens to the hardcore chronic tokers like you and me. And speaking of...
Yeah, speaking of you and me, chronic... I've got some hash. Yes, and 3.5 ounces? Really?
Really? 100 grams a year? Really?
That would only make me a couple grams of hash.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Ph.D.
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky Roller Rink, Roller Rink, Roller Rink.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on RadicalRust.com.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Today's Irie Wednesday couldn't be better timed for me. You know, I'm not real good in the realms of faith, belief, and miracles, but God, I need one right now. So I'm going to turn things over to Brian Redd. We can get some Irie inspiration for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. So coming up here, we've got a track from 1993 off of a 7-inch 45 speed record. This is Soul Majestic and Anthony B with Stand Up.
Come together, unity is true.
We must
when we fight each other, doesn't make any sense. Break down the barriers and burn down all wire fence.
Don't let the next man push you down. Keep your feet planted firmly upon the ground. Stand up and fight for equality.
Yo, get up, stand up and fight.
Hold your head up high.
Stand up.
Find the strength inside.
Life is rough.
You can't run and hide.
Every man have a right to survive.
Stand up and fight. That's the way I know about it. One love, we cannot live without it. Global struggle, the whole world are shouting. Stand up. Me know why you doubt it. Who are why for me team them up? Don't see us, but my me I go clean them up. Just you and me from various demo. All right, them been fighting from creation. I come from inspiration, so I tell my mission. Time out for elevation.
Hold your head up high.
Stand up.
Find the strength inside.
When life gets rough,
you can't run and hide.
Don't give up your right to
and push you down. Keep your feet planted firmly upon the ground. Stand up and fight for equality.
Yo, yo, kill yourself and fight. It's not a fight for you, kill your sister and your brother. It's a fight for the nation to come together. One love, oh, it's a hey, it's a power. And that one umbrella we are climbing the ladder. The warriors want the old blank at him. Come with a double six and the double blank.
Hold your head up high.
Stand up.
Find the strength inside.
Life gets rough.
You can't run and hide.
Don't give up your right to survive. Stand up.
Hold your head up high.
Stand up.
Find the strength inside.
Life gets rough.
You can't run and hide.
Fight for your right. You don't stand up and fight. It's time for you right. You don't stand up and fight. Don't not fight. You don't stand up and fight. I know it can be a fight. Yo, time for me. Fight, 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 fight for my people. And I will never, miss never. Why you must have advice them for my right. You
understand? Stand up.
Hold your head up high.
Stand up.
Find the strength inside.
Hey, Jill, how are you? Everything's absolutely amazing. I haven't seen you for ages. I haven't seen you last week. I mean,
you're not invited.
Am I not invited? What's your name?
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me. I'll make you
look. What are you laughing at? A little bit stressed, a little bit panicky. You look a bit baby, a little bit scary. You're right.
What's your name?
You're right.
Okay.
The more you mess with cannabis, the more it can mess with your mind. To find out more, talk to Frank.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at NORML.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome everybody. Half past the hour, and it's a Wednesday, and that means it's time to speak with newly elected NORML board member Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Woohoo! How about that?
That's pretty darn cool.
I'm pretty delighted.
Yeah. So you're part of the, who are the other new board members who were elected along with you?
Well, so we got Diane Fornbacher, who everyone knows and loves.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm afraid the other folks are escaping me right now. I'll have to look it up.
Rick Cusick from High Times.
Rick Steves has been, you know, a salient participant already.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the usual suspects. The guy from Weed Maps, whose name is
Justin Hartfield from Weed Maps, and
exactly,
and Rick Cusick
and
from High Times.
Two others I can't think of right now.
Rick Cusick from High Times.
You got it.
There we go. I think that's all judges. Did we get them all? Yes, we did get them all. We're all good. Okay. As always, when we start off these discussions, we let Dr. Mitch Earlywine set the table with the latest in cannabis studies, science, polls, all that kind of stuff. What's new in the news?
New data from the Annals of Epidemiology showing that, what a surprise, medical marijuana states don't have increases in teen use. In fact, in this data set, there was a drop of a half of a percent.
Oh.
And also no oddball changes in attitudes about marijuana's perceived harmfulness. So anybody who thinks medical marijuana is a bad idea has less and less data to stand on.
There we go. And speaking of the data, I got a note from Paul Armentano, our friend with Normal, and he sent along new research from Hartman and Huestis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing Marilyn Huestis' name correctly, but Huestis, perhaps.
That's it.
Yeah, there we go. Marilyn Huestis on the detection. She's one of these experts on the whole science of detecting cannabinoids in the blood and whether or not that's going to lead to impairment. And the money quote on this was her saying that there is no direct correlation between driving impairment and THC concentration. I wonder if you got a look at that and if you have any other gems to mine from it.
So I saw an abstract from a poster she did on the same idea and from that same data set. And in fact, you know, what a surprise. People's variation in tolerance is so dramatic that trying to do things in nanograms per milliliter is just a bad idea. I've, you know, jumped up and down before about how roadside sobriety tests are definitely the way to go because they detect, you know, Benadryl or any other kind of impairment, not just cannabinoids. And we definitely all know folks who are regular medical users or just regular daily users who have tolerance that's so high that the any level we would set would be ridiculous given their ability to drive after using. So I really hope that this can help buttress the argument for roadside sobriety tests and not anybody having to give up blood or urine.
Yeah, let's hope for that. And Dr. Mitch, there's another topic out there. I've seen it pop up in the local news around here in Oregon. Apparently a story of a police being called to find a woman, a naked 19-year-old woman holding an infant in her arms and swinging a hammer with the other hand, all freaked out and hallucinating. And they're attributing it to this herb, this drug called kratom. And I'd never heard of the dang thing, but we talked about it last week and a couple of our Canadian listeners informed us what it was. I looked it up. Have you heard much of this kratom, and do you have any information for us on it?
So both this one and Damiana were kind of making the rounds for a little while as potential intoxicants or just interesting recreational things. They have a long history, but we just don't have a ton of data on them. Obviously, this woman was in over her head on it, so I'm reluctant to say much from a single case, though, because she may have had a psychotic disorder before. She could have been, you know, in the middle of some kind of manic episode. It's just too soon to say that this is always harmful or always bad, but obviously it was not a good time this time.
Yeah. How much of that is an effect in this reporting? You know, we get these stories a little while back. It was the face-eating zombies, right, on the spice or whatever. We get these stories that are hyped up of people having these huge breaks with reality. It's always attributed to the fact that they're doing some drug, but how much of that is them doing some drug to deal with the fact that they've got such a huge break with reality?
Well, and I do feel like these chicken and egg issues never come up. The fact that some of these folks, when you look deep into their personal histories, had psychotic breaks before or were at least schizotypal, had kind of a schizophrenia light style of interacting with the earth, is something that we ought to keep in mind anytime we see one of these. And as Bruce Merkin of MPP used to say, if it bleeds, it leads. We always get the dramatic part. We might not have heard of the hundreds and thousands of people who used it without any negative consequences.
Of course. All right. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine here in our cannabis Q&A. You can call in live at 971-533-7111 or drop your question into our chat room here on Ustream. Just type /login to create your account. And we've got a question here coming from LCAP in our chat room, wants to know if there is a way to purify cannabis resin into something less harmful.
Not an efficient or simple way. And in fact, I mean, the resin that you're getting, you know, just on the side of your pipe probably doesn't have a lot of psychoactive THC left in it anyway. So I mean, not something I'd recommend without some pretty serious access to chemical equipment.
Yeah.
So, we just sorry, bad news.
Yeah, we just had another one of these, blowing up hash stories out here in Oregon. Some 22-year-old making butane hash in his house, and of course exploded, and he goes running down the street. I'm burned. So we're hearing more and more of that, and I keep wondering, in a legal scenario, isn't what they do in most pharmaceutical factories basically that, stripping from plants and other substances their essential oils and make them into pills?
Alas, only a small percentage now do that. We've come to the point now where almost at least the top 10 sellers are all pretty much synthetic.
Oh.
So it's just turning one chemical into another chemical. I'm afraid it's nowhere near as natural as it was even 60 years ago.
Wow. Okay. Well, certainly under legalization, we could have some sort of regulated industrial production of these things. It'd be a whole lot safer.
And in fact, I think the idea that we even need to move away from whole plant is certainly worth debating.
Ah, yes. Many rants on that subject. Normal Patriot in our chat room has a question. How hard would it be for us to self-monitor, like with a test strip? And I think it would say with blood alcohol, there's that little chart they give you as far as when you're too drunk to drive, or there's all sorts of little, is there anything like that coming on the horizon for us consumers so that we can know if we're above 5 nanograms?
Well, so, if you want a kind of instantaneous behavioral measure that seems to co-vary with driving impairment, go ahead and stand on one foot, stick the other foot about 18 inches up in the air, hold your arms out, and see if you can hold it like that for about 30 seconds without tipping or swaying too badly, and that would certainly be a good marker as far as, just general motor skills are concerned. But I want to encourage folks to just say, hey, maybe tonight's not the night for me to drive anyway. Why don't I arrange things so that everybody comes to my house, or that I can walk to the place I want to go, or let's do public transit. Or in a lot of towns, a cab might be $4 to $8. I can get an awful lot of places in Portland for $2.50,
Yes,
so let's take advantage of that.
That's interesting you mentioned that. It seems odd to me that we're so frightened about how adults may or may not smoke pot and then drive, yet every bar I drive by has a parking lot. They basically are assuming someone's going to drive there for the purposes of drinking alcohol, and, well, we're going to give them at least a little bit of leeway in determining their own responsibility to get behind the wheel. Just seems like a strange double standard, isn't it?
Maybe we could extend the same courtesy to cannabis. I like that idea.
That'd be very nice. All right, we have a question from John Thomas who wants to know, I seem to find a potency variance in any given strain from dispensary to dispensary, even from 1 month to the next. How can we get standardized effects for each strain?
Well, I do want to sort of play up the idea that, we're within a certain range here, and particularly because, if you're vaporizing, you can monitor your dose to some pretty precise inhalation sizes that you don't want to drive yourself too nuts. What we are seeing is folks who can grow indoors under really standardized conditions can replicate both THC and cannabidiol concentrations using the same strain in the same medium with almost identical lighting. But again, don't make too much of this. I feel like one vaporizer hit versus one and a half is not something that you should spend too much time driving yourself crazy about.
Well, what I was going to say also was that he was saying dispensary to dispensary. A lot of times, even the same strain grown from the same seed or even off the same mother plant can have different concentrations based on the chemical contents that they use for their nutrients solutions, and also what kind of growing medium that they have. Also, the lights make a big difference, whether it's indoor or outdoor makes a difference. These are all factors. So if you want to get a consistent, effect, I would just say try and get as large of a quantity as you can from a specific grow spot, from one specific source.
Yeah, and that also brings up the point that there are a lot of development of cannabinoid pharmaceuticals going on, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I think in some circumstances it will be nice to know that one spray of Sativex or one capsule of this is going to be exactly a certain CBD-THC ratio, a certain potency, and so forth. We just shouldn't sacrifice our access to the whole plant in the meantime.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Want to remind everyone also, if you don't have time to get your question in here for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, you can always send it by email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And as we wind things up, Dr. Mitch, I'm just wondering here, now that you're on the normal board, if you have any insight for us on the latest projects or what's happening with normal.
Well, so we're looking into some novel ways to try to raise some cash. That's always, of course, a big standard. And then we definitely want to make sure we're in touch with the research literature. So some of my colleagues and I are preparing a paper for Albany Law Review. And then the Mid-Atlantic Regional Conference is coming up in Philadelphia on March 16th. I regret I won't be there, but I'll be at my daughter's bat mitzvah. Oh. And then if folks have wild ideas that they would love to see Normal do, by all means, don't hesitate to email me. I've seen some crazy ones, and I'd love to see some crazier ones.
All right. Well, that sounds promising. Very, very nice. Well, Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us and sticking with the show as long as you have, and we'll continue to talk to you on our Wednesday shows. But next week, we got the day off because I'll be flying to Atlanta.
You enjoy it?
Of course, that's a recorded version of our Ask Dr. Mitch segment. Dr. Mitch is off today for Shavuos, and we'll return next week with your live calls and chat questions in our Ask Dr. Mitch segment. I've been collecting about 5 or 6 different new studies that have popped up just over the past week. We'll have plenty to talk about. Stick around. Coming up next, Radical Rant, the ongoing reefer madness of Dr. Christian Thurstone.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right. Well, the Denver Alternative Weekly Westward has picked up on my article about Dr. Christian Thurstone. His blog post was entitled Higher and Higher, and it was the one where he was worried that kids would start to be shooting up THC, right? Because, you know, they're so, it's getting so powerful, they're getting so addicted, the next move will be shooting up THC. So Westward picked up on this and quoted me in the, actually page 3 of the article. Nice, got my headshot picture in there and everything. And Thurstone actually responded to a couple of my criticisms, so we're going to take a look at that as well. Let me switch over to I got that window, another one. All right, so we're fine here. But let me get to some of the points that he made real quick. First of all, there's a quote here in the article where he says, "I started thinking about this in 2004. When Dr. Wilson Compton published an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association showing that the prevalence of marijuana use in the United States was staying the same, but the prevalence of cannabis use disorders, marijuana addiction, was going up significantly." All right, so you know me, I don't trust any conjecture that relies on defining marijuana addiction based on the number of people seeking treatment.
since so many of them are forced into treatment by prohibition. So I decided to take a little look at the data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health with respect to the rates of use of marijuana, and in particular, the rates of use of marijuana for the children. You know, what about the children, right? And we find some interesting things. What they're saying here is, you know, that you got all this marijuana addiction. The marijuana addiction is going up significantly. Thurstone likes to say so many more kids are seeking help for marijuana addiction, yada, yada, yada. All right. So I decided to take a look at the data because that's what I do. And what I've got here are the data from the 2010 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, followed by the 1991 National Household Survey of Drug Abuse. They changed the name of it sometime in the 2000s. And the 1979 National Household Survey. So, you know, similar data here. And we'll just take a look at this. What we find, and I broke it down by age 12 through 17, and then the young adult ages, 18, 19, and 20. And the reason I picked these years are significant. The year 1979 represents the apex of modern marijuana consumption, at least as it's been reflected in surveys. The most people admitted to using marijuana. This was the time when about 60% of high school seniors were saying that they had, you know, tried marijuana, 1979. Then we got the numbers for 1991, which are also significant because 1991 is the year we see the modern low of marijuana use, where the fewest people report to these surveys that they're using marijuana. And then we've got 2010, which is the most recent year for which we have breakdowns by age. There is a 2011 national survey, but they haven't yet given us the breakdowns by age. So the most recent data I have. And what I did was I came up with the number of how many users of those drugs were counted in each age group. And what we find is that teenagers made up, or I'm sorry, let's go for the whole group, all ages, age 12 to 20. Now, in 1979, there were 8.9 million people aged 12 to 20 who admitted to using marijuana in the previous month. But there were 23.1 million people of all ages who admitted to using marijuana. So if you do the math on that, the percentage of all tokers represented by ages 12 to 20 is about 39%. About 2 out of 5 tokers were under the age of 21 back in 1979. Now we take a look at those same figures. In 1991, it's about 2.3 million tokers under the age 21 and about 7.8 million overall. That made about 30%. About 30% of all tokers. So we go from being about 4 out of 10 to being about 3 out of 10 from 1979 to 1991. Now, since 1991, since the potency of marijuana has increased so much and we've had the dabs phenomenon and there's so much more addiction going on amongst the kids now make up a little more than 25% of the total population of tokers. In fact, there are fewer people under the age of 21 smoking marijuana now than in 1979. There were 23.1 million in 1979. There were 19.9 million in 2010, despite the fact the population has gone up significantly since 1979. Now, if we take a look and do this a little further and break it down a little further, let's talk about the gap between the adults aged 18 to 20 and the teenagers aged 12 to 17. In that case, we also see reductions at both age levels. About 17% of teenagers used marijuana monthly in 1979. It's down to 10% of teenagers in 2010. About 21% of teenagers used marijuana in 1979, or of young adults aged 18 to 20 used marijuana in 1979. About 15% are using marijuana today.
And remember, we're talking about 1979, which Dr. Christian Thurstone and Kevin Sabet and those fellas always like to tell us was when, you know, weed was only 2% THC or 3% THC. Why was it that more people were smoking marijuana when it was lower potency back in 1979 than are smoking it today when it's supposedly such high potency? It kind of pokes a hole in this idea that there's rampant abuse and the kids are destined for addiction if we don't do anything. Now, there's another line that he has in here that's it's quite funny. Let me read this one to you. I don't think in the mainstream scientific world of addiction that there's debate anymore that it's addictive. It works on the same part of the brain as all other addictive substances, and there's an animal model of marijuana addiction now. We know that it's not just psychologically addictive, but physically addictive. And studies by Dr. Alan Budney at Dartmouth have characterized a physical addiction to marijuana. Marijuana withdrawal is clinically equivalent to tobacco withdrawal. And anecdotally, in our experience, we see adolescents coming into treatment extremely addicted to marijuana. They're dropping out of life, giving up on school and families to pursue their marijuana addiction. All right, really? You want to stick with that marijuana withdrawal is clinically equivalent to tobacco withdrawal? Really? Do you know any tobacco smokers who've tried to quit? Look, people quit smoking marijuana all the time. Happens all the time when they're studying for their drug test. Oh, I got to study for my drug test. I'll stop smoking for a month. Do you know a lot of tobacco smokers that can just stop smoking tobacco for a month? You don't hear of that happening very often. Now, I went up and looked up the studies on this. This dates back from about 2008 when this BS started hitting the waves here. The original study goes back to Johns Hopkins University's Ryan Vandry, and they studied 12 people. A whole 12 people, folks, who were heavy smokers of both tobacco and marijuana. Participants reported smoking pot at least 25 days a month and smoking 10 tobacco cigarettes per day, and no plans to quit smoking either. And here's what they did. They made them stop smoking pot, but not tobacco, and then had them rate how they felt. Then they had them stop smoking tobacco, but keep smoking pot, and then rate how they felt. And then had them stop smoking both, and had them rate how they felt. And they said, you know, they got about the same equal symptoms when they were doing stopping one or the other or both. Okay, so that's their alleged study here. The Budney study that he's, yes, the guy's name is actually Budney. The Budney study was a telephone survey. This naturalistic telephone survey study compared perceptions of withdrawal severity in 67 daily cannabis users and 54 daily tobacco cigarette smokers who made quit attempts during the past 30 days. A withdrawal symptom checklist assessed the severity of abstinence symptoms, and a Likert scale assessed perceived relations between abstinence symptoms and relapse. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Both groups reported that the withdrawal contributed substantially to relapse. Individual symptom severity ratings were similar, except craving and sweating were slightly higher for tobacco. They say the discomfort scale was 13 for cannabis and 13.2 for tobacco. So thanks to this telephone survey of about 120 people, we now have evidence that there is a huge marijuana withdrawal symptom, and being addicted to it and withdrawing from it is similar to tobacco. Or you can talk to a tobacco smoker who's tried to quit. You can look on the shelves to see Chantix and Nicorette and gums and patches and every attempt and products up the yin-yang to try to get people to try to quit smoking. I don't see a lot of that with cannabis. I don't see a lot of people panicking because, oh my God, I can't stop pot. Now, whether people want to stop pot is another thing entirely. And whether or not there are withdrawal symptoms from marijuana might have a lot to do with why you're using marijuana. I mean, losing a cane does not indicate withdrawal symptoms if you suddenly develop a limp, right? If you're using marijuana to help treat your insomnia, and then they take your marijuana from you and you exhibit insomnia, that is not characteristic of a withdrawal. That is characteristic of not having your medicine. Now, there's some more Christian Thurstone fun in here, and he is where he comes to answer my points. that the Westward put up, which was that, you know, the more people are forced into his business for violating prohibition, that for every one person who self-admits to rehab solely for marijuana, another four are forced there by the criminal justice system. He first says that he works with adolescents and young adults, so for pretty much 99% of my patients, marijuana is still illegal. Amendment 64 didn't change anything. Additionally, he says, fewer than half of our referrals are court referred. The majority are not. They come in voluntarily because of their addictions. Well, all right. First of all, release your data, doc. Put it out publicly. Give us your counts. Now, you can, you don't have to violate HIPAA. You don't have to tell us the names of people. But why is it that you want to hide behind, well, you're looking at the TEDS A data, and the TEDS A data is only for people that are sentenced, that are put into publicly funded rehabs? Why do you want to hide behind that if you're not willing to put out the same level of data transparency as the federal government is? We're supposed to take your word for it that 99% of your patients are above the age of 21 or 21 or older. We're supposed to take for it on your word that fewer than half are court referred. Give us the data. And furthermore, all right, fewer than half of your referrals are court referred. That tells me that some number between 0 and 49% of the people going into your treatment are court referred. And when we look at the TEDS A data, and that represents 58% of all people, of all admits. It's about 1.6 million admits in TEDS A. There's about 1.1 million admits that are not covered by that federal database. So about 58% of the people are covered by it. And that represents the people that are being forced into a marijuana rehab by the courts at rates of 4-to-1 versus self-referrals. In order to bring that even to just a balance of 1-to-1, even just to have one self-referral for every one court referral, to overcome the 4-to-1 ratio on the 58% side, you need a 9-to-2 ratio going the other way on your side. You need 9 people voluntarily checking into your rehab, Dr. Thurstone, for every 2 that are forced there, just to balance it, just to make it 1-to-1. Now, I'm not unsympathetic to people who may have an issue with a marijuana dependence, any more than I'm unsympathetic to people who have sex addiction, shopping addiction, so-called, let me put the scare quotes on it, so-called, because these things are dependences or compulsions. And in fact, even DSM-5 isn't going to label it as a dependence anymore. They're going to call it a disorder. Regardless, we are talking about so many people that are being forced into this rehab that anything we have to say about how much more addicted people are getting is clouded by the fact of prohibition. Now, we can come up with some pretty, you know, reasonable statements with regard to alcohol. That's pretty easy, because with alcohol, the only people that are being sentenced into rehab or given the choice of jail or rehab are the alcoholics who've also committed some other crime, gotten too many DUIs, had a vehicular homicide, whatever it might be, something where there is a true indication of a dysfunction in that person's life. But so long as getting caught with marijuana is what gets you into a rehab, your statistics are all skewed. They're all skewed by people who don't have serious problems with dependence or use, who are easily able to quit, and then you can pat yourself on the back. Oh, our rehab does so great. Yeah, you managed to get a functional pot smoker to stop smoking pot by forcing him to pee test and threatening him with jail. Woo, great work, doc. This is so frustrating reading this. You can I'll put the link into our chat room here at 420 Radio if you want to check that out for yourself. But for now, that's all the time we've got for today. We'll take your comments and questions in hour 2 of Toker Talk Radio, where you are the voice of the marijuana nation. The phone number is 971-533-7111. I'll have a blog post up on this Dr. Christian Thurstone stuff as well. And all the data charts that I use in these rants can be found on my Pinterest account, pinterest.com/radicalrust. Look for the Radical Rust data board and enjoy. Share it. Spread the knowledge. Fight them with data. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
We love it.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you